Good morning. It's good to see everyone this morning. Thank you for being here. My name is Daryl, and I'm a volunteer meditation instructor here at Columbus KTC. And on Sunday mornings when Lama Kathy is away, we devote our 11:30 Dharma talks to particular books, selected Dharma books. And this morning we're concluding our discussion of Chenrezig for the Benefit of All Beings by Kempo Carthar Rinpoche, who is the founder of this center. So actually the chapter that we're kind of set to look at is some assorted questions and answers. Basically, the conclusion of a Dharma talk that Rinpoche gave. And rather than do too much with that, I thought what we'd do is give kind of a summary presentation that covers some important bases, and then conclude with some practice together. So that's kind of how this time will go this morning. We've seen in the book that the practice of Chenrezig is a meditation on the Bodhisattva of compassion, who is known in Sanskrit as Avalokiteshvara. Can everybody hear me okay? Thanks, Ron. Sanskrit name is Avalokiteshvara or Avalokita. The Tibetan name is Chenrezig. So this entire book is devoted to the meditation, the guided ritual meditation on Chenrezig. But many times we tend to think that meditation refers to simply quiet sitting meditation. So our hour of meditation from 10 to 11, a lot of people think, well, that's what meditation is. But the Tibetan word for meditation actually means getting used to. And getting used to means we're getting used to our own mind. We're getting used to our mind when it's moving. And we're getting used to our mind when it's stable, when it's still. We're getting used to our mind's awareness. And in the Buddhist tradition, we have many ways to do this. We have many ways to get used to our mind. And we talk about three paths that are referred to as vehicles in the Buddhist tradition. So the first in the Hinayana, which is Sanskrit for the smaller vehicle, we concentrate on our own personal spiritual development, our own spiritual transformation. And this path is characterized by basically the question, how can I get rid of my stress? How can I get rid of my suffering? So in the Hinayana, the answer to that question is we practice by letting go. And we let go of our clinging. We let go of our fixation. We let go of our reactivity. And we do this through the practice of shamatha, or calm abiding meditation. With shamatha, we place our attention on the breath, and when we're distracted by a physical sensation or a conceptual thought or an emotional state, we simply notice, we gently, openly let it go, and gently bring our attention back to the breath. Now, initially, when we start practicing like this, we experience our thoughts as solid and real and more than anything, as important. But gradually, through shamatha, this changes. And we come to see that our sensations, our thoughts, our emotional states, they appear and disappear like clouds in the sky. So, what this means is that with practice, we can watch our thoughts arise, linger for a moment, and then simply drift away. And we begin to see that our self-concept, which is what all of this thinking is about, our self-concept isn't a solid, unchanging entity. Instead, it's completely open. Now, when we at some point have this experience of no self and non-separation or non-duality, compassion naturally arises. This is simply the natural result. And when this happens, we have entered the second path or vehicle, which is called the Mahayana, or the larger vehicle. And here the focus is on benefiting all beings, not just ourselves. We're not just thinking about how can I get rid of my stress, my suffering. Now it's about all beings. We might say that this path is characterized by another question. And this question is, how can I help? On this path, we emphasize transforming the three poisonous mental states of attachment, aversion, and ignorance. These three so-called poisons are how we respond to everything that presents itself to us. So we transform these through the practice of compassion meditation. In compassion meditation, when we breathe in, we imagine that we're breathing in all the suffering and unhappiness of all beings and relieving them of it. And when we breathe out, we imagine we're offering all beings all of our happiness and well-being. So as we practice like this, it's obvious we're looking beyond ourselves. Our perspective is broadening to include others. We're having less concern for ourselves, more concern for others. Now, the third path is known as the Vajrayana, which is the path of indestructible method. And this refers to the fact that the Vajrayana has the same motivation as the Mahayana. This is all about benefiting all beings, but the emphasis is on special methods of meditation. Now, on this path, we emphasize transcending our previous limited view and recognizing our true nature. And we could say that this path is characterized by not a question, but a statement. And that statement is, everything is sacred and miraculous. And the special methods used on this path are the practices of visualization and mantra. And these are traditionally called sadhana practices. And the word sadhana is a Sanskrit word that means means of completion or means of perfection. So these sadhana practices are guided ritual meditations that are designed to help us purify and perfect ourselves. The primary technique of all of these practices, all of these Vajrayana practices, is to replace the thought of our relative self with the thought of ourself as a Buddha or bodhisattva. So we practice visualization and mantra to make a transition away from our usual, normal, mundane outlook and to move ourselves toward sacred outlook. And with sacred outlook, we see all forms as the body of the Buddha, all sounds as mantra, and all thoughts, the essence of all thoughts, as enlightened awareness. So we're moving toward a perspective that transcends our previous limited view. We're also maintaining a connection with a particular source of inspiration. So before we get started, let's follow our tradition of chanting together the short prayer of refuge and bodhicitta. In this prayer, we do a couple things. We generate the wish to liberate others, and we take refuge. We take refuge in the Buddha, the source of the teachings, or awareness. We take refuge in the Dharma, which is the teachings. We could say truth. And finally, we take refuge in the Sangha, the followers of the teachings. Or we could say love and compassion. If you don't know this prayer, that's not a problem. Please simply join us in your heart, thinking that we're going to listen to the teachings, contemplate them, and bring them into our life in order to benefit others as much as possible. Sanje Chodan Soki Chognam La Jang Chu Bardu Dakni Kyab Su Chi Dagi jin so chi pe sa nam ki Dro la ha pen chir sanje dru par sho Sanje cha dang so ki chok nam la Jang chu bardu dakni kyab su chi Dagi jin sok ji pe sa nam ki Dro la ha pin shir sanje dru par sho Sanje chodang so ki chok nam la Jang chu bardu dakni kyab su chi Dagi jin so ji pe sa nam ki Dro la ha pin chir sanje dru par sho. Thank you. So, as we've discussed on previous Sundays, the Chenrezig practice takes us through key stages of practice. The first stage is taking refuge, which is what we just did, and generating bodhicitta, the altruistic motivation. We also did that. The next stage with the Chenrezig practice is the creation stage. And here we create a visualization of Chenrezig and meditate on his form and qualities. While maintaining the visualization, we recite the mantra of Chenrezig, which is Om Mani Padme Hum. The first syllable of this Om refers to the body of the Buddha. The second syllable, Mani, means jewel. The third Peme, that's a couple syllables really. Peme means lotus. And the last part of the mantra, Hung, refers to the mind of the Buddha. So when we put these words together, what we have is a physical description of the appearance of Chenrezig. And so we have body and mind of a Buddha with a jewel and a lotus. So the creation stage is followed by the dissolution stage or the completion stage. And here we dissolve the visualization and we rest in awareness, clarity, and spaciousness. And then finally, the last part of the sadhana is emerging from the state of meditation we just described and engaging in sacred outlook. And this means that we sustain the confidence that all forms are enlightened body, all sounds are enlightened speech or sound, and all thoughts are enlightened awareness. And we sustain this awareness as we recite the closing prayers of the sadhana and dedicate the merit of our practice. But beyond that, we also continue this awareness in our daily life. So what we're doing is developing a foundation in which we can continue sacred outlook throughout our day. Now, normally, I think we all know that we don't look at things from the perspective of sacred outlook. Our normal way of seeing the world is to see things as flawed, limited, very much compromised. And we react to what we see, as we said earlier, with attachment, aversion, and ignorance. And as we do this, as we have these reactions, we accumulate more and more negative habits and more suffering. But with sacred outlook, what we're doing is systematically letting go of these obscurations. So we can look at this sort of in a detailed way. We're letting go through Vajrayana practice, we're letting go of, first of all, our shabby self-construct, which is basically built up of all of this incessant thinking that we're always maintaining. We're letting go of our fixation on seeing things dualistically. So, in other words, seeing things always as self and other. We're letting go of our fixation on afflictive emotionality. And, of course, as we let go of these things, we're also letting go of the karma that results from these obscurations. So, in this practice, we're letting go of all these things without clinging and engaging instead in sacred outlook. So we're replacing all this clinging with sacred outlook instead. So what are the benefits of doing the Chenrezig practice, or another one of these Vajrayana practices? We can talk about the benefits in a lot of ways, and we can actually be kind of detailed about this too. When we meditate on Chenrezig, we're doing a lot of things. We're accomplishing a lot. Number one, we're letting go of illusory thoughts, illusory thinking. We're also accumulating merit, which is sometimes defined as good fortune, but we could also say that it is a positive inner momentum. We're also developing compassion when we practice Chenrezig. Chenrezig is the bodhisattva of compassion, and we're developing compassion in the practice. But at the same time, we're also cultivating shamatha, or calm abiding. And beyond that, we're fostering insight or wisdom. We're seeing, learning gradually to see things the way they really are. And finally, we're developing Mahamudra, which refers to the highest practice of the Karmakagyu tradition. But where we first encounter it, really, is in sadhana practice, probably in the Chenrezig practice, during the dissolution phase. So that's a very detailed description of the benefits of the practice, but we can be more succinct. And so a more succinct description of the benefit of the Chenrezig practice is that we're purifying our conditioning at the very deepest level. Now, Lama Kathy has a really interesting way of approaching sadhana practice. She's a big fan of Broadway shows, and she's really into it. And so she uses theater or plays as a metaphor to explain sadhana practice. She says sadhana practice is like a play in the theater. And she breaks this down into about five parts, and it really works. She says, okay, first of all, actors in a play recite the lines of the script to create an experience. And similarly, when we recite the liturgy of a sadhana, this guided ritual meditation, when we recite that liturgy, we're also reciting lines to support a particular experience. Second, the actors in a play, you know, when they're preparing a play, they learn the blocking, they learn all the, you know, physical movements on the stage. Oh, they walk from, you know, A to B, and so on. And so they learn to perform physical actions on the stage. And likewise, when we do a sadhana practice, we learn to perform the physical discipline and actions and activities of the sadhana. Now, third, we can keep going with this. The actors in a play portray emotions. And similarly, when we practice one of these Vajrayana practices, we are enacting particular emotions and internal experiences of the particular sadhana. Fourth, we have to note that putting on a play takes a lot of rehearsal. And similarly, doing a sadhana practice correctly and completely takes a lot of practice. And many times, I'm sure you can talk to people around here who have been assigned a life practice which consists of doing Chenrezig or one of our other sadhana practices. And the instruction is, okay, spend the rest of your life doing this. So it takes some practice. Fifth, when we watch a play, we could also say when we watch a movie, when we read a novel, we temporarily suspend our disbelief and give that play or that novel or that movie power over us. And the reason we do this willingly, is to enjoy something, to experience something, to understand something. Similarly, when we practice a sadhana practice, we are temporarily suspending our disbelief to enact a process of spiritual understanding and transformation. Now, we've been talking for a few minutes about sadhana practice. And when we hear about sadhana practice at first, we might think it's complicated. And it can seem sometimes kind of not only complicated but overwhelming, or maybe just irrelevant and beside the point. So let's just take a moment to briefly return to basics. So this is Buddhism 101. Buddhism says that suffering is caused by clinging to this small separate self that we think we are. But we're not this small separate self. And when we let go of our clinging to this small separate self, we also let go of our suffering. One of the fundamental ways we let go is through meditation. So meditation helps us let go of the small self, and meditation helps us see that we're actually Chenrezig. Or we might say, if we put it in more general language, we might say we're a manifestation of ultimate reality. So sadhana practice is a way for us to experience this gradually. Now, we have to say that we're never going to experience this without establishing and maintaining a daily meditation practice. So as practicing Buddhists, we have to make a firm commitment. This might be bad news, I don't know. We have to make a firm commitment to two things, really. The first thing is daily practice as the path, and the second thing is enlightenment as the goal. So we need those two things. Without these two things, our meditation practice isn't really going to amount to much. And what this means is that we could actually reach the end of our life and find that we've wasted it. Eric Weinberg, I wish he were here today so he could hear me quote him. He recently said something really wonderful on this subject. He said, "When our house is burning down, it's too late to start building a fire truck." So, in other words, we have to practice now. So we're urging daily practice, but while we do this, we also have to talk about a major challenge to daily practice. And this challenge is our addiction to thinking and our shabby self-concept. Now, we might think that we have a very modern, scientific, skeptical mind. And many of us do. But actually, what we're not skeptical at all about is all of our thinking, our shabby self-concept. But from the Buddhist point of view, we should be skeptical. The reason we should be skeptical about all of this thinking is because all of these thoughts, which basically are about who we are just things we've been told. They're just things we've heard. And gradually, they're things we've learned to tell ourselves. But basically, they're things we've heard or been told. So, from the Buddhist point of view, these thoughts that we're so wrapped up in, that we're not skeptical about at all, are merely gossip, hearsay, and superstition. And we say this because they're not direct experiential knowledge. Again, this is just a bunch of stuff we've heard. Now, another problem that we can encounter over time if we come to a center like KTC over quite a long time and we don't practice but we keep hearing the teachings, is that we gradually become jaded. We say, oh, I've heard these teachings. It's the same teachings again and again. And not only is it the same teachings, but it's all beginning teachings. But the question is, have we really practiced the teachings, and have we realized the teachings? Or have we simply wasted a precious opportunity? Now, some people object to meditation because they think meditation is merely a form of hypnosis. But actually, what it really is an antidote for the self-hypnosis we've been involved in. Actually, meditation is how we de-hypnotize ourselves, how we unhypnotize ourselves. I was an editor for 30 years, and I should have a better word for this, but this is how we undo our self-hypnosis. This is how we let go of all of our hearsay, gossip, and superstition that we cling to. Now, we have to say, in our practice, we use the power of devotion, of religious devotion, to clarify our mind and to open our heart. But Buddhism does not ask us to have blind faith. It does not ask us to believe in magic. And it's certainly not about trading our old set of beliefs or an old set of clothes for a new set of beliefs or a new set of clothes. Actually, meditation is like washing our dirty dishes. Now, when we wash our dishes, what do we do? Or really, what I ought to ask is, what is it that we don't do? What we don't do is we don't add more food to our dirty dishes. We actually wipe all that old gunk off. So if we want a clean plate, if we want the clean plate of our mind to be clean, we have to let go of all that gunk. So all of the practices that we do are about letting go and purifying. I want to share with you one of my favorite quotes of the historical Buddha. And this is just a fantastic quote. And you've probably heard me quote it before, so excuse me for this. So Shakyamuni Buddha, the historical Buddha, said, "What is not yours, put away. Putting it away will be for your good and welfare. What are the things that are not yours? Your body is not yours. Put it away. Your feelings come and go. Don't own them. Put them away. Perception and the things you perceive are not yours. Put them down. The way your brain works and forms ideas is not yours. Let it go. Consciousness is a condition that is general. It's not yours. Don't own it. Letting go and putting away and not owning will be for your good and welfare." Now, of course, what Shakyamuni Buddha is listing here, our body, our feelings, our perceptions, the way our mind works, our consciousness, all of these things are the things that we think, that's me, that's who I am, that's what makes up me. Part of the time, if our body's bothering us, we think we're the body. If we notice something, we perceive something we like or don't like, we think that's us, and so on, right up the list. But he's saying, well, none of that is who we really are. So we can let it go. So what he's talking about here, of course, he's using different words like put it down, put them away, don't own them, and so on. But it's all letting go. So we let go of our self-clinging and suffering. And the result of this letting go is we actually have more concern for others, and we also have more to offer others. So if we're asking, what's this letting go for? That's what it's for. So let's conclude with some practice. What we can do is spend a few minutes doing the practice of Guru Yoga. And we're going to do Guru Yoga because Guru Yoga contains all the elements of sadhana practice. But if we've never done sadhana practice, we haven't experienced that, but we can experience it now in Guru Yoga. So, in Guru Yoga, as in mantra or deity meditation, we visualize it on an enlightened being. We also imagine being purified and receiving that being's blessings. We also imagine that our body, speech, and mind become one with the enlightened being. And we conclude by resting in the nature of mind. So all of those things we do in sadhana, and now this morning we can do all of those things. So doing this practice can give us a taste of what deity meditation is like. So let's just begin by relaxing and settling the body and mind. So whatever we need to do that. If we're sitting in a chair, it's good to have our feet flat on the floor. If we're wherever we're sitting, it's good to have a straight back. But more than anything, we want to have a mind and body that are also relaxed. So now, if we're comfortable and we're relaxed, let's start with a visualization. Let's visualize an enlightened being or Buddha above our head or in front of us. And what we want to do is imagine the enlightened being in whom we have the most faith. So this could be, if we're Christian, this could be Jesus Christ. If we're Buddhist, we have a lot of options. But whoever we have the most faith in. Imagine this enlightened being is insubstantial and made of light like a rainbow or hologram. And this light is the embodiment of the compassion and wisdom of all the Buddhas. Now, silently address a short prayer to this enlightened being. In this prayer, we can pray for wisdom or confess something that's bothering us, or we can simply say whatever we'd like to. We can simply say this silently, whatever we'd like. Now, having made our prayers, we'll receive four empowerments. First, imagine that rays of white light from the enlightened being's forehead purify and remove all your obscurations of body. So let's imagine that. Second, imagine that rays of red light from the enlightened being's throat purify and remove all your obscurations of speech. Third, imagine that blue rays of light from the enlightened being's heart purify and remove all your obscurations of mind. Fourth, the white, red, and blue lights all come again at the same time, purifying us completely. Finally, think that the enlightened being melts into light and dissolves into you. The being's mind and your mind are completely mixed, just like water poured into water. Now, just rest in awareness, clarity, and spaciousness. thank you. I'd like to thank you for your interest and attention. Thank you for being here. Let's conclude by silently dedicating the merit of participating in this session. May all of us generate a sincere aspiration to tame the mind, wake up, and liberate others. May we establish and maintain a daily meditation practice. May our daily practice gradually lead us to complete Buddhahood. And having attained Buddhahood, may we manifest in order to guide all beings to liberation from suffering. Okay, thank you very much.